if there is somebody on the line that would like to speak sometime during the meeting, could you please indicate by saying, "I'm here"? Okay, thank you. All right. You want to make a motion to approve the minutes, sir?
I make a motion to approve the minutes.
And I will second that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Water, wastewater update. I believe that will be Mr. Harris. Is that you, sir?
We have several.
Okay, let's. Where do we want to update? Who wants to update first? I'm open.
No update.
No update. That's an agenda item. My bad. Okay, well, guess what? The next item on the agenda is the denitrification project. That would be Gregory Harris. Greg, it's great to see you. Thank you. So I didn't have to go on record for asking you to do that.
Gregory Harris, Urban Engineering, District Engineer for Town of Discovery Bay. So the biggest project Discovery Bay has put out ever is going out right now. And so I'm here to give you an update, sort of refresh everybody's mind about what that project is, as well as maybe people that haven't been on this committee before or haven't been involved with the district to get an update on what's going on. As you're aware, we have two treatment plants in the town of Discovery Bay, and our treatment plants are covered by what's called an NPDES, National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit, and that permit gets updated every 5 years. So every 5 years, they change our permit, and 7 years ago, they changed our permit to want us to treat the wastewater to remove nitrogen from the wastewater. So nitrogen comes in as ammonia, and the process converts it to nitrate. Currently, they want us to reduce that nitrate, and so the name of the project is denitrification. We're taking nitrogen out of the wastewater. Mixed in with that, there's a master plan done, some discussions about Plant 1, Plant 2, and ultimately a project was formed, and this is a project that will meet your NPDES permit, as well as picking up little master plan upgrade items that were developed when looking at what was the best way to pick up your permit needs. So just some quick dates here. The project went out to bid April 1st. So far, 14 general contractors have asked for plans and specifications. And you should have this all written, Mike, or excuse me, Kevin.
Is it got? Is there a sheet here that I'm not seeing? Ah. Thank you.
So this is a handout we just gave you, though. This.
Oh,
it's right there.
Here we go. All right, now,
now
I'm with you.
Now I got something to take notes on.
Okay.
And that's good. You're getting a lot of response from contractors.
Yep.
We have a job walk scheduled for April 20th. The bids are due May 6th, and we're looking for board award on May 19th. Construction notice to proceed, if everything goes well, would be around June 7th, and completion date would be around June 8th, 2023. So it's a two-year project, and that's largely a result of all the intricacies of trying to build in pieces in a sequential manner for how we do it, and we'll talk about that. So, I also handed out a set of drawings, Kevin.
Got it. Well, yes, I do.
You do.
And just a big picture for everybody that doesn't know it. Both treatment plants are shown here. We have Plant 1 and Plant 2. So, Plant 1 is on the north side of Highway 4, to the right on this map. And Plant 2 is on the south side of Highway 4, to the left on this map. And Highway 4 is right down the center. And that's just to kind of help orient yourself. As I say on my cheat sheet here, Plant 1, is the decision was made by the board to move on from Plant 1, so most of the improvements are done at Plant 2, and with the exception of some improvements on the inflow pump station and Pump Station W, a plant though one that remains in service. But the majority of work is going to take place at Plant 2. I'll describe the improvements here just briefly, and then I'll point back to the drawings for you in just a second, but new oxidation ditch number 4 is being constructed at Plant 2. New anoxic basins and inlet pump stations, number 2, 3, and 4. These are the processes that remove nitrogen. So these are the two processes here, remove nitrogen. They're going to go in front of each of your oxidation ditches.
So are those in a vault or what? Are they below ground or above ground or what?
Yeah, they're below ground, and I'll show you on the drawings in just a second.
Okay.
But it's, the vault is a good description. They're deep tanks in the ground.
Well, I think about that from electrical, same idea.
And then if you recall, last year there was a board action to improve the aerators at plant two because they were not putting out the correct amount of oxygen for the process. So we're also getting new, if more efficient and larger horsepower aeration rotors for ditches 2, 3, and 4. There's a bar screen. As you know, there was an emergency on the bar screen, but we knew it was on its last leg, so we had designed two bar screens into the project. There's obviously some extensive pipe reconfiguration required to make all this fit up properly. Electrical expansion to support all the new equipment takes place. And then to get it done, there's a lot of extensive bypassing and phasing, and I'll talk about that when we look at the drawings. And there's some other miscellaneous improvements in the master plan that were sucked up into this that were convenient to take care of when we had a contractor on site. So looking at the drawings, let's go to the second page. And this really shows you what's going on. So oxidation dish number 2 and oxidation dish number 3 are right in the center of the page, and they're kind of grayed out, kind of faded out in the background. Those are existing. And we constructed oxidation dish number 3 about 5 years ago. What's new is what's in bold on this drawing. And so you see to the right, oxidation dish number 4 is new, and you can kind of see how big this is. And then in front of each oxidation dish, you see an anoxic basin. So that's 16 feet deep in the ground. And those are fairly large. They're each 300,000 gallons each. The oxidation just for reference is 1 million gallons. You know, just kind of get a sense of how big things are. And then you see the little square, the little rectangles that feed piping into the anoxic basins, the little dark rectangles, those are the inlet pump stations. So essentially we pump out of the oxidation ditch into the anoxic basin and we let it flow back into the oxidation ditch. And oxidation just means we're providing oxygen to the biology. So the way the process works is the big tanks, you provide oxygen to the biology. In the small tanks, you don't give them any oxygen. And you let the biology do the work to remove the nitrogen. And what it does is it goes and separates the oxygen off the nitrate molecule. And they breathe that, and then the nitrogen goes off in the air. So that's what happens to the nitrogen.
So,
you have a question?
Yeah, I just trying to understand. So the small ones are they 2 and 3 and 4 is the big one? Or...
Yeah.
When you're referencing the small...
Yeah, so these little dark rectangles right here.
Oh, okay.
Those are little pump stations that pump out and make a circle and come back.
Got
and
it.
Those are there.
Okay, so that's where...
The two small boxes at the north end of the ditches.
That's
these,
right. These
little
guys.
Boxes
right
here.
Yeah, those are little pump stations. Right, exactly.
So... Go ahead, Ashley. Do you have more
questions? So the oxygen is going... Through
the big sort of racetrack, yeah.
Where does it start? Which side does it start?
Yeah,
sorry, I'm way more visual than.
No problem.
Does it start here or does it start here?
Doesn't matter, because it just makes a big circle. So water just goes around in a circle in here.
Okay.
And then we pull water out here and put it back in.
That's what I was asking.
Do you pull it out at the pump or do you pull it out at the pump and then it forces it back in because of pressure?
Yeah, by pressure. It just kind of goes downhill. Comes back around and makes a circle. And water goes around in the circle for 24 hours. It just keeps spinning around, you know. And we keep adding oxygen to it on the racetrack.
Other than that, the ox ditches, there's no difference in the
ox
ditches.
Yeah, other than that, it's the same as your other ox ditches.
Who's out there drinking the mixed liquor?
Some of our operators.
Is that you, Anthony?
So Veolia has a monopoly on all mixed liquor in the plant.
I'm sorry?
Veolia has a monopoly on all the mixed liquor.
Okay.
But they do give it out by bucket if you want some.
I guess that accent is moonshiners or something out of here back there. Okay.
That's, you know, basically the footprint. And then you can see all the intertight piping in black that goes on in between things. The biggest complexity of the project, each individual piece is not too bad, but the big complexity is keeping these two ditches operating while we build all this stuff. you know, so we have to keep it running, and we have to build the new stuff. And then the headworks is going to get a major upgrade. We're adding a new partial flume and two new headworks, bar screens, and that Anthony can attest to. We definitely need new bar screens, right?
Tell me what a bar screen is.
So trash and other products, I'll say.
Oh, catch it.
Come in with the wastewater, and they're very tough on pumps and equipment. So we screen. So it's a screen with bars on it, vertical bars, and the trash
okay.
Right around it, it's got a rake.
And what clears those off the bars?
It's got a rake that comes down.
Okay.
It rakes up and then drops it into a trash can.
That happens at the headworks?
Yeah.
I thought we used to have like a pit over here that used to do it or something like that.
Yeah, it happens at the headworks.
Isn't there like a pit?
That's a decant.
That's the decant. So what they're talking about is if the back truck was out and sucked something up.
Oh, that's where it drains it. Okay. All right. Because I remember that's where a bunch of garbage crap would end up in that thing, too.
And that's stuff that they're pulling out of manholes and pump stations.
Gotcha.
They're sucking that up.
Gotcha.
And
so,
this is stuff that just floats on in with the sewage.
Is the bar screen mechanically moved?
Yeah. So the bars stay one place.
And they have a rake that goes up.
They rake it up.
And what's worn out?
The one we have is a slightly different style from that, but they just all the gears.
It's just not efficient and not working properly anymore.
Yeah, and it was also a developer-driven, I'll say, bar screen to start with. So
understood.
It was a cheap bar screen to start with.
Enough said.
and you got your life out of it. You've had them for continuous operation for 10 years or so on that second screen. You replaced it.
Greg, this is all as new to me as it is to Ashley, and I'm kind of confused here. Can you come forward here? I have some specific questions that I want to ask you about. Just because I'm very curious and I need to know. So it comes in the headworks.
Flow comes in here.
Right. And then why does this go just to that one?
All right. So then it splits and it can go three directions.
Because there's three valves on it.
Yeah.
This one here too? That's the third valve.
So
okay.
You can go this way to this one.
Right.
Or you can go that way to that one.
Okay.
Or you see this little dashed line and you can come all the way over to
here. Yeah. Okay. And then when it comes out, what's this line right here?
This brings back. So eventually it goes around in a circle for 24 hours.
Right.
But eventually it's got to get out of there.
Right.
So this brings it back.
And goes to
the
clarifiers.
And it comes all the way over here and goes to the clarifiers. All
right.
So since we're doing this.
Yeah.
Is this just structured a little bit differently than these ones because of the placement of where that ditch is?
Yeah. This was all existing and the clarifiers are here.
Because these ones are on the left side and
this
one's on the right side.
Yeah, and this one we were out of room. Yeah, basically we're out of room, so we just had to mirror it, flip it over and do it a delta.
And it comes in here and goes out here. So what happens? Go through that process of how the D-Nite works inside of here for me.
Yeah, so the wastewater comes out of the ditch, comes over here. So we got, I'll say, mixed liquor coming in here. Raw wastewater comes this way. That mixes in the little box. Okay, and what you're doing is you're taking...
This is organic.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're taking, it's 16-foot deep box, and you're taking wastewater full of bugs, which is mixed liquor. So it's full of biology. It's got all the bacteria you need.
Okay.
And then you're dumping a huge food source right on top of it.
Okay.
In that basin, right? And then you do it without any oxygen. And what happens is nitrate, which is what you're trying to eliminate, nitrate, the formula for nitrate is NO2.
Right.
Okay. Bacteria have to breathe. That's why these guys have aerators here, right?
Right.
So what happens is you dump all this food right in here. The bacteria love it. They go nuts. They grow exponentially. But then they run out of oxygen because there's no oxygen in there. They start looking around for oxygen. And they say, hey, there's some O2 on the end of this end. I'm going to go steal this. I'm going to go breathe this. And then the N2 will just float off in space.
As a vapor?
Yeah.
Can you tell
like
it's a vapor? Is there a smell that goes along with it?
No. Our atmosphere is 60%
nitrogen.
Yeah, what's it? I can't remember what it's called.
So we breathe nitrogen.
So why can't we bottle that and sell it to the drag racing industry? Because they use a lot of NO2 in their industry.
If you could figure out how to get a little lot of molecules out of there, yes.
So I have a couple more questions. How long does it sit in here?
This is one pass, and this is about, you know, 6 to 7 hours.
6 to 7 hours. So yeah. It only takes 6 to 7 hours for that.
Yeah, but remember, we keep making a big circle out of it too, right?
So each time it gets a little bit better. So
right.
It's almost like a digester, like an anaerobic or an aerobic digester for waste, where it sits there, bugs eat it, and then it produces
what we want.
In a digester, it would be methane.
And so the bugs in this are aerobic bugs. And they're breaking down the biological matter that came in. I won't tell you what that is, but it's biological matter that came in the raw sewer. You decide what that is, okay? So they break that down in here. And then these guys are gonna break down the nitrogen specifically that came in the sewer.
Source of the nitrogen is natural.
Ammonia.
It's natural.
It's ammonia.
It's ammonia.
It's urine.
Urine.
Okay. I'm with you. I think I understand it better now.
Good.
Makes sense.
So
you have any questions, Ashley?
No.
I'm going to ask some more questions too. Let me finish this and then I'll answer
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Where's my cheat sheet? Okay.
So about the cheat sheet. All right. So estimated construction cost is $3.5 to $15 million. But there's a caveat, so I'm going to hang on here. There's a lot of concrete in this job. There's a lot of concrete. I mean, by thousands of yards of concrete, okay? So we're heavily influenced by the cost of concrete, but unfortunately going on in the construction world right now are two things. COVID affected the amount of cement that was produced last year, and there's a cement shortage because they shut down plants. They just didn't make cement for a while. And you need cement to make concrete. The other thing going on is interest rates are zero, and they're building homes like crazy. And so now there's a huge demand on concrete and asphalt, which you have a lot of on this job. And I've been told by other engineers and other clients I've worked with that, you know, for instance, they can't get a concrete delivery when they need concrete, and they got to wait a month to get a concrete delivery. And another project, they had to wait 2 months to get a major concrete delivery for a project. So.
And it has to be a certain specification of the concrete mix in order to meet with California standards, correct?
Right. Oh, yes.
Yeah, so that makes it even more difficult because there's only, like, probably a handful of queries that can handle
So there's some unknowns floating around out there. And then the other thing going on is because they're building houses like crazy, they're having trouble finding laborers. So I have two other clients working with contractors, and they've slowed down the production because they just can't get the bodies for it.
And if I could just interrupt for a second. So our team are going to track every COVID delay that takes place, no matter how minute, because NPDES permit has a time limit.
That's what
this needs to get done.
That's where I was going next.
We are tracking every one of these. So when they come back and try to hold our nose to the grindstone, we can track it, all the delays that were COVID-19 related, and maybe explain away why things went over.
And that's important to fight for, so we don't get into the same kind of problem we had with Veolia last time, where we didn't give them enough time to operate the new plant, and then we were in violation the minute we turned it on.
Right, and so the dates here are important. I guess I could have missed a date. The last date, number 7, I should have put on there, is December 2023. That's when our permit takes effect. So we're trying to give Veolia 6 months to operate the facility and shake out the bugs before we get exposed to a permit that finds us. So that's the goal of this project. That's why the schedule is the way it is. So we have a little bit of buffer, but the last thing we want to do is turn this plant on in December.
Is there a visual inspection by somebody from NPDES on?
Yeah, okay. I write a letter.
Is there a way to
write a letter to them and say we comply with the permit and we are done?
But they don't send somebody out to look at it?
They will do on their annual inspections, but in terms of the compliance with the permit order.
So we're not in communication with them until you send that letter out saying it's done and we've met the requirement.
Well, they ask for reports every year, so we give them an update every year. Like, okay, we're in design. Okay, we're doing this. Okay, we're ready to start construction. So every year we give them an annual report.
So if there are delays, it will be in that annual letter that goes out ahead of time before the end of the project.
I can't, my other question is, can we request an extension knowing in advance right now that we know there's going to be delays? We're not the only one experiencing that. I mean, it's being experienced across the country and across the state for many other things that the state's requiring people to do. And I don't think it's going to get better.
I doubt they'll give it to you ahead of time, but we, like Mike said, we're going to document it and we'll update them along the way, and then we'll be in a position to argue with them.
Well, if we get...
The other thing that's important about this is we are building it in phases. So before we're done with the whole project, we'll actually have two ditches online and operating. So we have to build four, three, and two, that order. And we'll have four and three up and running, and then we'll be working on two, but they'll actually have time to play around with four and three. And if push came to shove, you could run four and three and meet the permit.
Really? That meet the permit?
Yeah, I don't think we're at risk of blowing the permit deadline.
Is it going to increase the cost at all past that $15 million?
Well, that's the big caveat, is there's a lot going on in the construction market and with the COVID-related impacts. Every vendor I call, it's like the get-out-of-jail-free card. They just say COVID. They're like, COVID. Like, no, you can't have it now. It's COVID.
But it really is. Being one of those vendors that sits in that industry, it's affecting everything.
Yeah, exactly. So what's going to happen, what my concern is I can't perfectly estimate what's going to happen. There's too many variables going on. When we estimate a project, we look at what did it take us to build it last time, which we have numbers for, right? We could put an inflation index on it, and we can do these sort of things like that. But we can't take account of what's going on with the concrete vendor, what's going on here, and what's going on in the construction market, and they can't find laborers, and so what kind of risk premium are they going to put on the job? I have no idea.
But won't that should be a consideration from which contractor we choose, though, too?
Well,
it's going to affect
all of them. The consideration is going to be the low bid contractors who you choose, and that's the law. You're getting the low bid contractor.
Even if they can't perform?
Well, if they're qualified. There's qualifications. So if they meet the qualifications and they're low bid, they're getting the job.
Of course, they're not going to tell you that they can't find labor.
But there are liquidated damages in the contract. There are timelines in the project. And there are, there are things that kind of keep the contractor on schedule. But if something comes up that's outside the contractor's control, you can't hold LDs on.
Currently, we just happened to have a finance committee meeting. Currently, we have 15.6 million in the budget. Was it 7,400 twice? 14.8 million in there? Is that what it was? I don't have that paperwork anymore.
Yes, it was.
14.8 million in our budget for it.
Yeah. So what's important is your budget is probably a project cost, which includes all the costs incurred for the district, which includes my design time, CM inspection, staff time, and all that. This is construction costs. This is what I think the bids are coming in at. So you have some other costs over and above this that are part of your CIP budget, I'll say. And at the moment, simple terms, if the job comes in at 13.5 million, you're right on track for your CIP budget, maybe slightly over. But if the job pushes up to 15, every dollar over 13.5 is pushing it beyond your CIP.
What do you estimate costs that you should be fairly good at estimating, and that is, what do you estimate the additional costs over and above the construction project? Is it a percentage, or how do you come up with that number?
I'll just say this. With no contingency, zero contingency, I'm at $13.5 million in my estimate. Okay? Realistically, it's going to be more than
that. That's plant cost. That's construction costs.
Yeah.
What do you anticipate additional project costs on $13.5 million to be?
Well, keep the math simple. If you said you were 14.8, where you're at?
Yeah.
There's a couple CIPs mixed in there. So I'll have to confirm that you're looking at.
What were you going to say, Dina?
So what you saw was just the plain construction. You didn't see the $1 million that we already have budgeted for design and all that other stuff.
Okay, well, that's my question.
Yeah,
There's above construction costs is an additional project cost, you said.
Yes.
Is that a percentage of total project costs, or is that just an estimated number?
Well, right now it's a known number because it's just for consultant contracts and stuff.
And that number is?
Well, our
13.5, correct?
No.
The number for the additional project costs over and above the 13.5 construction costs, what number are we using for that?
I get it.
It's approximately $2 million is what it is.
How much? $2 million?
$2 million for design, inspection.
Everything other than construction.
Exactly. Yeah, it's about $2 million.
That's what I'm asking.
Yeah.
About $2 million. So no matter if the project goes up from 13.5 to 15, it's either going to be 15.5 or 17.
Correct.
That, because that number shouldn't change. That's a, that we pretty much know what that's going to be. Okay, and we know it's going to be right around $2 million. So every time that we talk in conversation upcoming about what where construction costs are, when you guys open the bids, I know I can just add $2 million to that,
right,
and that's what it's going to cost us to build.
That's what's going to cost us.
That's the number I was looking for.
Right.
Okay. Floor is yours.
So that's basically the project in the 30-minute elevator speech, and I can answer any more questions that you have about
No, I just want to make sure you're comfortable with getting it done when it needs to be done. I mean, that's on you to be comfortable. I'm not going to sweat it because I won't know it. You will.
So let's put it this way. I'm not concerned that we're not going to be able to get our permit.
Okay, that would be my chief concern.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about that. There's 9 months of construction that occurs after we build 3 and 4. So it's a 2-year job, but there's 9 months after we get 3 and 4 done that we're still working on the plan to get the job done, but
so
we're actually making it the right way.
If there are, and I hate to keep using the word bugs because it seems like, no pun intended, but if there are bugs in the process, you have time to work them out way before the end of the permit, before the permit's due, because you've already completed at least one of the complete systems.
Right. Yes.
And what's your experience with that, with the denitrification, Anthony? Are you comfortable with what's coming on? You have enough knowledge of it?
We are, and even if I was the perfect operator in the country, I've already reached out to my go-to guy for extra support, so that I can just have a second set of eyes on that, because it's a big undertaking, it's a lot. Keep in mind, we've got to keep the current system operational without fault. Me and Greg sat down in great detail going over the phasing, and the phasing of this is particularly so that we try to get, you know, 4 and constructed without coming into contact so much with the 2 online, get the pipe ran, and then we go into 2 or 3. There's things like that we're doing.
Go ahead.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What does that process look like? Like, how do we make sure that we're running hand in hand and coincide with doing the project, but also keeping what we need to do with the wastewater?
That's what my guys do.
Okay.
They have
and there's contingency plans if like something goes astray or doesn't work on
Greg's
that?
Greg's team and the construction, and they're going to be focused on strictly the new upgrades. My team has to operate and maintain no matter if there's construction or not.
And we have weekly meetings.
Okay.
We have weekly meetings on site every week to talk over that interface and that coordination between operations and construction.
Awesome. I have one more question too that's not related to them working but on the bid process. Did we put any language or any questions? I mean, obviously we know that we're in COVID, but are there any contingency plans for the bidders to give us some information about what they would do if they run into some of these issues? Because they've got to know that it's happening, and they're probably already running into that with other contracts that they're doing right now.
That's a good question. In the bid documents out on the street right now, there isn't sort of that, I'll say, conversation with the contractors. And we have to be careful because if they say certain things, they could position themselves nefariously down the road if we're not careful, right? They could say, okay, we know we're going to get this job done on time. Let's just tell them it's COVID.
Kind
of thing. So it's currently on the street as a traditional, here's your timeline, there's liquidated damages if you don't get done, this kind of thing. We as a district recognize that if something is truly outside their control, they have to prove that. They can't just say it. But they come here and say, look, here's the cement guy, here's his receipt, he won't deliver it, you can call him on the phone, I can't get concrete, I'm not responsible for this delay. We're going to have to accept that. But at the moment, we're playing this up as a straight construction job, and we're going to let them prove to us during construction, if this is a delay, prove it to me, and then we'll evaluate it at that time. So we don't have to speculate up front as to what might cause a problem.
And what does the language look like for increase in cost from what they originally give us? I know we're not at that point. We haven't looked at the bids and accepted them. I'm just trying to understand that process. So if they come in and say, this is the cost for us, and then it goes up, I mean, do we have a contingency? It can go up 10%, but after that, we need feedback. What is that part of
yeah,
it look
so,
like?
So the way the contract is written, like a traditional construction contract, there can be no change in price until we agree to it.
Okay.
And they can dispute that, and then we go fight it out, right?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, they'll say, hey, I think I'm due money to this, and I'll say yes or no. And then if they disagree with me, like, no, you're screwing me, well, then, you know, then there's arbitration processes. And, you know, right?
Okay.
But that's essentially the traditional construction process. And at the moment, that's the way the job is set up. Now, you know, that being said, if they can prove something to us, there's no need to fight over it. You just, okay, that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
So if they say, I can't get concrete today, or I can't get concrete for 3 weeks and I'm standing around, we can't pour, you know, there's a cost impact to us on that, and here's the proof, then that's reality. I'll go run down the proof, I'll call the people, we'll make sure it's true. But if that's the truth, then we'll negotiate out, okay, this is what your crew cost for this time to sit around for that concrete show.
Okay. Thank you.
I imagine that the coordination will be on a critical path nature with regards to, like, because we are working on the other two aux ditches at the same time, putting in the new rotors and that type of thing. So it's just on a critical path thing. Nothing's going to be left. And I don't know, is it going to be tried? Are we going to try to coordinate some of these things around low, you know, the lower volume months that we have? Or
yeah, so not so much on a monthly basis because we don't have that luxury, but there are shutdowns coordinated after hours on the weekends. Like, one of the main entrances, like the entrance road, is in horrible shape. Entrance roads have been beat to hell, and we've got to fix it. But there's only one road into the plant, and
yeah,
it's not a very wide road. So, you know, we have requirements about, okay, you can only take it down on the weekend, get it fixed between here and here. You know, we try to coordinate the best we can, but in terms of low flow periods, the flow of discovery base is pretty steady year round.
Okay.
It's very stable year round. Would you say, Anthony? Yeah, it's very stable year round. We have occasional wet weather for
right,
a day or two, but you never know when that's going to show up.
Not often enough.
Not often enough, yeah. Like this year for sure.
Okay. Ashley, do you have any other questions?
No,
for right
that,
now?
That's all.
I don't, but I'm hearing somebody on the phone, and I want to make sure I give you the opportunity to make any public comment at this point. Is there somebody on the phone that would like to make a public comment?
Yes. My name is Tiffany Thayer. I just want to make sure this is the right meeting that I need to be a part of. I live in the Centex home.
Yes.
And this is the City of Discovery Bay meeting, correct?
Oh, Town of Discovery Bay, and no, if you're looking for the general meeting, that starts at 7 o'clock tonight.
Oh, it starts at 7 o'clock.
This
okay.
This is a committee meeting, and I will answer that question for you in a second. Is the phone number the same as this? Did she call just now?
No.
Okay, hold on a minute. Let me get that. It's on the website, but let me see if I can get it off my agenda here real quick and give you that.
I can get it.
That phone number. It's 877.
Uh-huh.
778-1806.
Okay.
And the conference code is 891-949. And that is for the regular meeting of the Town of Discovery Bay.
Okay, so that would be the meeting that I get onto in regards to speed bumps and things like that, requesting?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
You bet. Bye-bye.
First 10 minutes.
Bye.
Be there early.
In reference to what?
Speed bumps.
I mean,
speed bumps. Oh,
we can
okay,
kind of talk about water.
Yeah,
speed bumps.
No, you call the county if you want to talk about speed bumps. We don't talk about speed bumps here. You can talk about speed bumps all you want to, but.
Any more questions?
No, thank you for being thorough and answering.
Yeah, Greg, that was a good presentation. Appreciate it. I think that, man, a lot of work. Sure.
Yeah, I would like to take you up on that offer.
Yeah, we can show you what's planned, even if it's not there during this phase. We can bring you in and show plans are and what we're planning to do. So maybe sometimes seeing it is better than worse. So.
Is there any current denitrification systems in the area that we could go look at to see what it's similar, what it, or is this going to be new for everybody?
So Manteca runs the denitrification system, but it's all, they're a little, they don't use, there's not a lot of oxidation ditch combinations with denitrification.
Okay.
There's a lot of, I'll say, what they call traditional aeration bases, which are long rectangular structures with anoxic zones. But a lot, everybody to the east of you already does this. So like Manteca, Stockton, Tracy.
Lathrop?
Lathrop denitrification.
Do you have denite at the laser plant?
We do, but not oxidation. Not
yeah, you have denite, but not oxidation. Right. So most plants are, you know, not oxidation. Oxidation ditch, cheap plant. That's why Huffman built it. Okay, so that's why you got it.
What's the alternative to an ox ditch?
Well, they're deeper rectangular basins, and they're called traditional aeration basins. And so the aeration basin might be 16 feet deep. These ox ditches are 6 feet deep. The aluminum gallons, that's why they're so big. Because they're only 6 feet deep.
Okay.
And they have these rotors that spin. I will say this though, an oxidation ditch has been running in Discovery Bay for 40 years. So
yeah.
You know,
it's not that it doesn't work, it just works differently.
Yeah.
Oxidation ditches generally in our industry are very dependable. Typically less moving parts, short of the rotors. And so they are useful at what they do, but as they increase permit restrictions and things like that, then you have to add on to them.
So just thank you, Anthony, for that, and we will take you up on that offer as I talked about. I also hear somebody else on the phone. Is there somebody who would like to make a public comment? And if you're just there listening, that's fine too. I just wanted to give you the opportunity to speak. Okay. Do you have anything more with your presentation, Greg?
Nope, that's it for me. Do you have any more questions?
I think we're good for now. Yeah. Appreciate the conciseness and simplicity of it. I even mostly understood it. item number two is discussion regarding water projects update.
Justin Cho will be giving that to you, and he should.
Oh, is that who I'm hearing bounce around on the phone there, Mr. Cho? Justin, are you there?
I keep checking my mute button. Yeah, can you hear me?
I can. We all can. Welcome.
Okay, all right. Wonderful. Well, maybe my mute button's not working. Maybe you were hearing me.
Maybe not, but go ahead.
So, I want to just give you a brief overview of some of the projects. We don't have anything prepared, so I'm just going to keep this very, very brief.
Okay.
What we're going to do at the next meeting in May is give a bit of a more thorough presentation for the Well 1B rehab project and probably a bit more on some of these other projects that are currently ongoing. But by May, by the next meeting, we'll have that project basically done. We'll have final results. We'll have I'll probably bring the hydrogeologist from our firm who handles the rehab projects to give everybody a kind of a better description of the rehab issues that occur that result in rehab and, you know, some of the challenges that we face with trying to restore performance. And then I'll be providing some thoughts moving forward for Well 1B based upon the results from the rehab. But at this point in time, where we're at with Well 1B, is that the well cleaning procedure has been done, and they've been test pumping it this week, getting some data. I haven't seen the numbers, but I've been kind of in communication with them, so I don't have anything really official to discuss. But just kind of foreshadowing, looking ahead, it's not going to look like it's very different from where the well was before the rehab started. However, we did remove a lot of material, and we're doing a post video after the rehab just to get a visual inspection on the casing, and what we're going to see is probably a very clean well based upon the material that we were removing from that. So that's just kind of the foreshadow for that where that project is at. We're right now in a mode of trying to get the well back online as quickly as possible so that we can have the water available for us in the upcoming higher demand The way the wells and the filters kind of work within the system is we really need them all available during summer months to have some redundancy and capacity if there's any issues at all during, you know, during operation. So we really have a design of, you know, the capacity of wells and filters that are pretty much all needed throughout the summer at this point in time until we bring well 8 online to provide a little bit more, I'd say, flexibility with operations. So with that said, you know, we've got the pump scheduled to be coming in for well 1B the last week of April. With final testing at that point in time with the permanent pump that's going in, and then we'll do our, you know, from there, water quality, bacteriological testing, and we'll be able to put the well online by probably the first week of May. So it'll be online in a, well in advance of where the higher demands, we start to see the higher demands start picking up typically in May. But it's June, July, and August being the highest peak that we see for water demand. So the project's basically almost done. And in, like I said, May, I'll come down and I'll bring Scott Lewis and we'll have some figures and data and we'll give you, a very thorough presentation of the well rehabilitation process.
Okay.
That project.
Go ahead.
So yeah, if you want to have questions about that project, we
no.
can do that, or I can move on and start talking about the other project.
Move on, please.
All right. So we're doing a filter repair for Newport, and then we're after the Newport filter repair is done, we're going to move on to Willow Lake. So these repairs also we need to get done before the high demand season picks up. We've completed the repairs needed on the Newport vessel. What we had found during the initial inspections on the Newport vessel is a hole in the tank, in the vessel. And it's a pressure vessel, ASME code rated vessel. So we had to get an R stamp repair from a certified contractor and state inspector, so that we can get a legitimate repair made to the vessel. So that was all known before we went into the process. And then when we got inside the vessel and did further evaluation after taking it offline, there was a little bit of extra repair that was needed, but not very extensive. There was just more of the structural brackets that carry the piping on the inside of the filter. There was a little bit of welding work there, and So that was all done. We had inspections completed for the coating, the surface preparation and the coating. So that was all done very, very thoroughly. And it's been coated now. And it's at a point ready to receive the internal filter components and the media. We're just notified from the contractor that there's a delay on their media. And that was just as of yesterday. So I'm trying to find out what kind of delay we're talking about, but because these projects were stacked so tightly together, we had originally set out to do these last fall, but due to some of the initial delays in kicking off this work, we kind of ate up any spare time we really had. So depending on what happens with this current delay on the media, we may only have time to do the Newport filter. We just don't know yet until I get a sense of hear from them and find out, well, what is this delay? Are we talking a couple days? Or are we talking, you know, a week or more? Because we really don't have that much flexibility. So worst case scenario, we'll finish the Newport filter and put the Willow Lake filter off until after the high demand season, but we won't make any decision like that without, you know, conferring with the whole team and talking to Veolia and getting a sense of, what their comfort level will be with taking the Willow filter offline, because that will be the second filter that we'll do. And once we're done with the Willow filter, that'll conclude this filter repair project. And then we'll be looking ahead to working on the remaining three filters in sequence over the next couple of years. These filters are anywhere from 15 to 20 years old. The oldest ones are about 20, and the newest ones are about 15 years old. So at 20 years for a steel vessel that we've had the media changed out, some of them one time. And the media typically lasts 10 years, but at this point in time, doing this kind of refurbishment is expected for the level of work that we're doing on it. So once we put it back online, we'll get at least the next 10 years and maybe another 20, before we're doing something major like this on it again. So that's where we're at on the filter project.
Hey, Justin. So over at Newport, we have one long filter. Over at Willow, we have three small filters. Am I correct?
At Newport, we have two long filters, and at Willow, we have three shorter filters.
Okay. Ashley, do you have any questions on that filter project? Okay. What else you got for us, Justin?
All right. So we're also over at Newport. We just completed a replacement of the above ground piping, the station piping for well 4A. So well 4A is the one that's inside of Newport. Mm-hmm. We upgraded the drainage pipe, upgraded the station pipe. Belia is working with the valve representative for the control valve for that system that's going to go online next week. They'll collect their bacteriological sample from the well after we flush it and put it online. So that's good. Just letting you know, you've got well 4A is pretty much done now. Over the last couple of years, it's gotten rehab, gotten a new pump, new motor, and then the above ground piping was all corroded and starting to kind of fall apart. So all that piping is replaced now. I think a year ago or so, Veolia upgraded the starter. So well 4A after this will be done for quite some time.
Fantastic.
Also, just letting you guys know, we're about to start a pipeline project, the pipeline that crosses Willow Lake. So one of the 13 crossings we have in the system is getting replaced now. We have a general contractor and we have a horizontal drilling contractor involved in the work. The general contractor is JW Backo.
Sure.
And the horizontal drilling contractor is called Northern Directional Drilling.
Are they on site now?
The Northern Directional Drilling will be on site on Monday. So it'll be about a week long. It'll go into a little bit of the following week. So about a week and a half or so will be the drilling process. They'll pretty much do all of the drilling in 1 week, Monday through Friday, normal working hours. And then the following week, they'll probably be still working on some of the final connections, final flange fittings, and pressure testing. And then JW Backo will be finishing it up with the final connections to the water system, and the abandonment of the old crossing and kind of the cleanup and the finish work that we're doing there. So that portion, that final portion will probably be 2, maybe 3 weeks. JW Backo thinks it'll be even less than two, but just bracing you for there could be some work out there for the next, anywhere from, 3 to 4 weeks. But
pretty quick,
quicker
actually.
Than that.
How does that affect the homeowners?
Yeah.
Justin, sorry, this is Ashley. How does that affect the homeowners over there?
Well, they're not going to be, we do have traffic control. Nobody will be blocked from access to their home throughout the entire construction process. There will be some activity and noise from the working hours of 7 to 5. No, there won't be interruptions in water service during most of the project. All of their water service will stay just as it is. There will be no issues with it up until the very end when we're going to abandon the old main because there's not a valve located right there at the crossing, and we need to cut and cap bottle pipe, and we're also relocating a hydrant to a more kind of conducive spot for operation. During that final phase, we'll have to have an interruption in service for a few hours, which we'll be preparing for with JW Backhoe and with Veolia and with the town to make notifications to the residents.
So they'll have plenty of notice for that.
Yeah,
but it'll be a very small. I mean, what, a couple, 3 hours, maybe interruption.
I'd say about 6 hours.
About six hours.
Okay.
And that
will be at the very end of the project, so we're probably, 3 weeks away from that.
Anything else, Justin?
Well,
You don't have to.
We are going.
Go ahead.
I don't have to make. I got a couple things on my list. I don't know if I'm just going to give you the updates and that.
Okay.
So we've been working on the urban water management plan, and we will be doing a presentation for the board at the April 21st meeting. That's our plan right now. We're making some final changes of this urban water management plan in working with the district staff. And also working with the GSP team, that's for the East Contra Costa Agency, making sure we have all the right information in there for this planning document for the district. So the timeline we're on right now is to bring a draft urban water management plan to the board meeting on April 21st. Just for information purposes, no action will be needed, but I just wanted to give you a heads up that. Because we won't have a committee before then, so I just wanted to let you know.
Okay, and let me give you a heads up. During our finance committee meeting this afternoon, we noticed that in the budget year 22-23, I think it was, we have a possible rehab to well 6. And when I asked the question about that, it was indicated that we're having some issues with well 6, and I asked that be addressed at the next water wastewater committee meeting. So I wasn't aware that we were having any issues with well 6. So why don't you take look into that and put together a brief report for us, or get a report to Dina or something like that.
Will do. Yeah, it's been something we've been talking about at our weekly water meeting.
Got it.
And we're still in a data collection phase right now. And Anthony's been spearheading a lot of the information for water sampling that we're collecting on the production wells. Why don't we prepare a report for you and give you a better update at the next meeting.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Ashley, do you have anything more?
No, thank you.
Is there any public on the line that has any comments on that presentation? Okay, thanks, Justin. Appreciate it. See you, bud.
Bye, Justin.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Okay. Moving right along to the end, I believe. Future agenda items, we already discussed that. We'll leave that up to Dina and her team to put together. Do you have anything you want to put on the agenda, Ashley, specifically?
Well, 6.
Huh?
Well, 6.
Oh, God.
So very nice.
I just told her I was in a meeting and she's calling me. Is there any comment in the public about that? I will adjourn the meeting.